As I mentioned, the president of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland and indeed intensive care unit physician, Dr. Catherine Motherway, joins us now. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Dr. Motherway. We heard there from Fergal that there are 194 patients in intensive care units, and he said that the figures are growing, but not at expected levels. Does that tally with what you and your members are seeing?
So what it said was 194 people have been admitted, and they have indeed been admitted, and a significant number, as you know, have been discharged, as Dr. Loughlin referred to this morning. We've had a number of successful discharges, and unfortunately a number of patients have lost their lives. So at the moment we have a bed information system, so we know that there are 145 confirmed cases in the ICUs with at least 22 suspected cases, and a significant number of patients have been discharged successfully, and as we progress we would hope to see that number grow. So the numbers are steady and creeping, but Dublin still remains under pressure. There is capacity in the system. In at least four of the hospitals, that capacity is surge capacity, but there is capacity in the system. But that should not be taken by our public as a reason to be complacent. I think the public need to be absolutely congratulated, and they have certainly, in my view, helped control the surge and have allowed us as intensive care physicians to provide adequate care to our patients. So they have done good work, but we do need them, particularly the weekend coming forward where we'd normally travel, to stay at home. They need to continue to obey the advice that's being offered. No travel outside of the 2 kilometre distance unless required, washing the hands and the physical distances. That is really vital so we can continue to have the beds for patients, COVID and non-COVID, in our hospitals. And in particular, locally, we've noticed a spike in our medical admissions in the last 3 days. Some of that is welcome because it means that patients who were avoiding us, that should have been coming into us, are now coming. People with chest pain and stuff like that are now coming to hospital, and we'd like them to come in a timely fashion. But some may be a reflection of the potential of a local surge where I work in the Midwest. So we are under pressure. We are very grateful to the public for what they've done, and we need them to continue to do that so we have the time and the space to continue to treat our patients.
Can I ask you how you judge what's coming down the tracks? Where do you take your guidance from? Is it new case numbers, or is it the number of people who are admitted to acute hospitals?
It's a bit of both. I think the hospital admissions, and this is a personal opinion, is slightly better, because we know internationally that about a quarter to one third of those cases get referred to critical care. So if you know how many you have in your hospital, you have a fair idea how many are likely to come to you, because they don't initially, this disease progresses. So, you know, they don't come directly to the ICU. About over half of them are coming to us from the wards. They've been in the hospital for a period of time. So in all of our ICUs, I would imagine we have a group of patients in the ICU with COVID disease, and we have a group outside of the ICU that we are keeping an eye on, that we're regularly going to see, who are, you know, progressing along their disease course, and we're seeing whether or not they need to come to us. So the hospital admissions, I think, are helping us a little bit more. But of course, the numbers in the community also will help us. But how reliable that is in relation to the testing is a difficulty that the HSE, in fairness to them, are doing their best to actually continue to work with.
What do you make of COVID-19 and how it behaves and progresses in the clinical sense?
Well, obviously, as you know yourself, 80% of people have a mild illness and get better with at least 80%, and 14 internationally require admission. And of that 14% of them, a significant number do require critical care. And it's a difficult disease. Once they come to the intensive care unit, they're a sick bunch of patients. We don't have an absolute cure. We don't have a drug that we know works. We're trying various drugs. And there will be ongoing clinical trials with patients' consent, obviously. But what we can do in the ICU is to support the lungs, which get very, very badly damaged during this process, support any organ systems, and hope and pray that the patient has enough reserve to get over it. And as we can see, a significant number are. Obviously, a significant number, unfortunately, do succumb to this disease, as is, unfortunately, a common feature of viral pneumonias in ICU. But we are seeing people who come in, who get ventilated, who are sick, but who do get better. But they tend to take about 2 weeks, maybe slightly longer, to get better. So it's a long intensive care course, and it is sometimes for some patients a difficult one, and not everybody survives, unfortunately.
And for those people who don't survive this, obviously the end of life care processes that you have in place have had to change, and that's very difficult for people.
It's very difficult for everybody. It's very difficult for the ICUs, and it's very difficult for the staff. We have a tradition in Ireland of being with our families when they die. We have a tradition of gathering. We have a tradition of being together and holding each other. And in this instance, because of the public health emergency, we're not able to do that anymore. And that is very difficult, both for people when they're having funeral services and for those of us in ICU where we would normally relax our visiting restrictions and have the whole family in with their loved one. And now this is... In some instances, it's difficult because maybe the patient who has who's at the end of life has a vulnerable relative, and they can't put themselves at risk by being with them. And for them, that must be absolutely tragic. And for those of us in the unit, we're so used to having the families with us when this happens that we're finding it hard. We're going to find ways, and we have found ways. We can do Skype in the matter. Obviously, they'll allow a certain number of family members in. We can do Skype things with them. We can talk to families, and we're going to make memory books. It's really important that for this period of time in our country, that everybody understands that those of us in the hospital system will do our level best to provide really good end-of-life care. And if we can't let them be with their family members for the very reasons that I've outlined, we will be with their family member. We will take care of them. We will remember them, and we will do our level best to let them know that they were comfortable at the end of life. And that is something that I'd really like everybody to understand, because, it's going to be very difficult for those families who aren't allowed the normal, what we're used to experience at the end of life in Ireland.
Dr. Catherine Motherway, President of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland, thank you very much for joining us on the News at One.